The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.
It's gone to the short side. Oh, it's not gone to the short side. It's gone to the try line.
I don't think we met before, but I'm the referee on this field, not you.
Hi Rob, Zeeb here. Just want to discuss the captaincy next.
He's calling.
When Ringrose comes through. Oh. That is brilliant from Ringrose. Ringrose is going here. What a score.
You're welcome to the Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady. We have a busy show for you again today, and I'm joined by our trusty studio duo of Pat McCarry.
Hey, how are you?
And James Downey.
Morning.
Hello. Duo.
Yeah.
Me and you.
My crusaders across the table from me.
There you go.
Yeah. We're also going to be joined on the line by Stephen Ferris a little later in the show. He might have some words about Ulster rugby.
Yeah, some informed, passionate views, no doubt, from Steve.
Yeah. Please subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify and all good podcast apps to make sure you get the show straight to your phone. Right, straight up. A couple of legends of Irish rugby bowed out this weekend, having contributed massively to the game over the years. Firstly, Dunica. Mm. Dunica O'Callaghan led out Worcester. Now, there is a man who's left a lot on the field for Munster, for Ireland, for Cork. But yeah, what do we remember about Dunica?
Did you see, there's actually a great image of Dunica running out into the field with his kids, and they're all in each of the jerseys of the teams he's actually played for, which is like Cork On and it's the fantastic Lions, and it was brilliant actually, wasn't it? A great picture. Lucky enough, I guess, to have played with the two lads. Dunica, geez, what a man to have. One in the dressing room, but what a professional. Like, I know people speak about people who've been pros and, like, you know, they leave in the front, but Dunica was that ultimate professional that got him that far. You know, you look at how much dedication he put into his he was doing yoga and Pilates way before it was fashionable, and just it worked because it extended his career so long, and he was so good and everything he did. But like every day he was in, like day off, we had a day off and he was always in, and he was always just pushing standards, driving standards, and he just kind of, when he wasn't there, you noticed him a lot, and I always think that that's a big sign of someone. And look, Dunica, the iconic moments, he's got plenty of them, and one of them be like in his wife runs in the red jocks, like it resurfaces every time.
It does, and that's the thing I want to get to with Dunica, because as you say, there's a man who is probably a little bit ahead of his time, even in the professional area, but the way he kept himself. How much was that in contrast to the kind of the public persona, which was always, it was jokey, happy, it was laugh, yeah, exactly, happy-go-lucky, but that wasn't the professional.
No, certainly not. Oh, absolutely not. Once he was in, across the line for training, he was focused and completely serious, you know, and obviously everyone has this jokey personality and you see him and he's hilarious and he certainly is, but behind that though, he's so driven, you know, and his standards are so high, and he really pushed those standards in training for himself. Like, he was so so dedicated to everything he did. He gave 100% to it, like, and look, it was so disappointing for me. Like, personally, I thought when he left, it was like, oh, you know, he could have been another one club man, and it was just nearly heartbreaking for him. But to have that drive to actually leave that, the easy thing for him would have been to finish up at Munster and go, well, I'm done. But he had that drive to actually want to keep playing. He wanted to keep giving back. And like, captaincy over in Munster just goes to show how highly regarded he was. And I'm sure a lot of young players have learned a hell of a lot from him. Like, you know, I certainly did when I was there. And he's a great bloke. And everything he did for Irish rugby is an absolute credit.
So, number two, John Muldoon. The boots are hung up for good before he treks over to Bristol to become part of the Lamb coaching dynasty, maybe. Who knows? Your memories of Mull as a player?
Again, kind of played with Mull in Connacht in my early years as well. I suppose Mull's early years as well. And look, everything he does is... been from, like, same with Dunica, been from the province, been from that area, been a local guy, especially Connacht at the time, around whatever, 2003 2004. It's just, he encompasses everything about, like, Connacht rugby, you know. He's the man, he's the flag bearer. When you think of things, when you think Connacht rugby, you think Eric Elwood, John Muldoon, you know, and these are the guys that just stick out straight away. And Mull lived and died by it for them. And look, I think everyone's, like, no one's going to be too worried or upset that he's gone to Bristol because he deserves it. Like, it's just a bit of a loss for Connacht Rugby, to be honest. I thought they should have done more, but that's another thing. But Mull, everything he did, like, Mr. Connacht, you know, and like, he certainly was. And I know people throw that about and band it about, but Mull's a great, like, if, to me, he was on and off the field. He brought everything to it and encompassed everything about Connacht, and that is good about rugby. And will we ever see these one club players anymore? I don't know.
Pat, you were off at Muldoon's last game.
Yeah, I headed down to the sports ground for it, and that was it. It was even at the end, like, it took, the funny thing about it was, you know, we had stayed up in the stand and the Clan Terrace to kind of, you know, look at Muldoon, give a speech and make the lap of honour and stuff and capture all those last few moments. And by the time we had got out and it was all finished and Muldoon had walked by all the fans, Leinster had already got on the bus and headed off. They were gone, like, they were back on the road. But yeah, then Muldoon was going through and just kind of trying to, that type of guy as well, he's trying to give as much time to people as he could and pose them for pictures, and it was a long goodbye for him. But yeah, there was a fan, like this kind of elderly kind of fan that I saw, and he was just kind of, I think he was more so saying it to himself than anything. He was just like, he'll be back. So like, they're gutted that he's going, you know, like, because he's, like, Kieran Keane was even saying he was invaluable in his first year there. Like, he said he needed Muldoon to stick around, and he asked him to stick around in his first year, and he was, you know, he said he would be forever grateful that he did hang around and play another year. But yeah, it's for Connacht to lose someone like that who's spent like 17 seasons there, like, but yeah, maybe he does need a bit of a break, like, you know, get away for a couple of years and get a bit of experience, and under Pat Lamb there's no better man. So but yeah, like, Connacht fans would be the, you know, first opportunity to get him back, they'd love to have him back, I'm sure.
I think as well, he's gone over there and it's going to be kind of the Ronan O'Gara-esque, when guys actually leave the bubble of where they've been for their whole careers. And I think Dunican might say something like something similar, that you get out of that Munster bubble, you get out of that Irish bubble, like, there's a whole different world out there, and there's a whole, like, and there's different ways of doing things, and we're very insular in how we look at things in Ireland, of course, but in the UK you do get a different perspective on things and training habits, and you're out of that Irish system. So for Mull, it's only going to be a learning process, you know, and it's going to be great. And there's Conor McPhillips there now as well, and you know, these players can or coaching staff can actually learn so much more and bring it back, like, and look at Prendy as well over in Oyana, and these guys who are learning abroad, and Birch is there, and they can all come back as well. There's always a chance, there's always somewhere that they can come back. But Mull to go over and get that education abroad and bring it back.
But there's a human dynamic as well. If you're going to be starting on a coaching career, it's going to be probably easier to do it with people who you haven't played with.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
You know, because otherwise you're really shifting dynamic. But you know, as these things can happen. That's a phone going off in the studio. It's okay. We've seen it before where a player cannot easily transition into coaching with the same group. But look, listen, as you've both said, best luck for John Muldoon. He's left everything out there. But what a way to finish. So yeah, we haven't even talked about what happened.
The match.
So 47-10, Leinster absolutely murdered out west. Fair play to Connacht. They played some brilliant stuff.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. They went. It was strange at half time because there's a period of around 15 minutes where Leinster were just banging on the door trying to get a try. Carberry got a penalty and then missed another one. So it could have been a lot closer. But the minutes, I think Tiernan O'Halloran got the intercept from James Lode, and you got a sense that the party was on here and there was going to be a good send off for Muldoon. And then they just kept coming. And it was relentless stuff from Connacht. And it was brilliant to see. Like, it was. You know, to be able to get to that situation where, like, as I said, like, the lads, Jack Carty was talking to us at the end, and he said they were trying, almost like Teddy Tamad done with Machinot, to try to set up Muldoon for a try in the final stages. Imagine thinking Leinster coming with like 8 guys in their squad had won a Grand Slam, and they're trying to give Muldoon a try in the last, you know, 10 minutes of the game, and missed out on the try, but was able to get a conversion as well then, and that was it. Like, he kind of said at the end, like, no disrespect to Leinster, like, but
I thought that was interesting because we've, like, it's become not a fashion, but we've seen it before now, that the retiring player at forward go on, take a conversion in your last game as a bit of crack. But Muldoon, straight after the game, made a point of saying, look, apologies for the conversion, no disrespect intended. But sure, no one, I don't think anyone took that.
Yeah, that was it. Like, it was saying, like, you had Keane Healy out there trying to charge it down, but then that could just be gamesmanship as well. Like, and like, Healy's a winner, like, so he doesn't want to see John Muldoon, you know, like, taking a conversion as well. So there was a little bit of, there was a few comments on the pitch, but nobody would have begrudged him. I'm sure like Leinster would look back at it now and they won't think anything of it at all. Like,
no, it's actually amazing how you look at players and how they retire and everyone doesn't get the send off, but John Muldoon got the kind of ideal send off. Like, I saw Brian Habana retired as well, and from the sidelines, you know, and like he wasn't involved, and not everyone gets that glory day that O'Driscoll got, but it's like, look at that's like that's textbook for Mull, you know. It's like gone on beating Leinster, hammering Leinster and get a conversion, you know. It's ideal.
And if you didn't get a chance to watch the game at the time or see highlights, go back and watch highlights. Connacht were fantastic.
Yeah.
And the Logan try from Delahunt's offload after Farrell's initial break, that offload is fantastic. You can actually hear on the replays the Connacht crowd at the time. After each replay, it just gets better. It's amazing. And from a hooker.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. Delahunt had this. It's just one of, you know, you've heard of him, you've kind of seen him a couple of times, but you see him in the flesh, and best game I think he's ever, he might even tell himself that he ever played, like making turnovers, and he had made, I think, the line break for the first try from Matty Alokan as well. He had made that line break, then made another, he turned over Max Deegan to start that try. Like, he got the turnover, won that. 20 seconds later, he's out on the right wing, this hooker, and he knew exactly what he was doing, like, you know, just
falling down, back of the hand, absolutely beautiful. But yeah, well done Connacht. You never know, they might sell a couple more season tickets after a performance like that. It was really, really good. I think we've got Stephen Ferris lined up on the line.
How you doing, guys? Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
Yeah, will we talk about Ulster rugby? We probably should, with Fez.
Yeah, it depends what you're going to talk about, lads, to be honest with you.
It was all looking pretty good at halftime down in Thomond. Again, for anyone who wasn't quite paying attention last weekend, Ulster needed to go to Thomond and get a bonus point win, and there were three tries up at halftime. Everything was looking pretty good, Fez.
Yeah, it was, and they completely dominated the Munster pack in the first half. I think the young tight head Brian Scott, I think his name is, got a bit of a pace from Callum Black, who's unfortunately leaving Ulster at the end of the season. It just showed what a class prop he is at loose head, and they just took it to the Munster pack up front, and when it came to Mull time, they got over Rory Best 2 scores, and you know, a lot of momentum was building. I think a slight turning point as well was Stuart McCluskey went off injured or with an HIA. I'm not really sure what happened there, but he went off, and the back line struggled to get going, get momentum to go forward. And yeah, fair play to Munster, they made a few changes at half time. They came back into the game, and Munster probably in the second half deserved to get back on level terms, but again, Ulster let a couple of opportunities slip, especially in the last few minutes when they had another try scoring opportunity to get them all set up, and they lost another line out, which I'm sure you might touch on. The line out was just so poor all day.
Yeah, it was a shame. I really thought it was set up for Ulster to go on, especially after Best scored the second of his 2 tries before half time. Like, you saw the look in his face, how much you thought that they were set up to win. And then, yeah, as you say, Munster came back into it in a very big way. But it did, like, they gave it a good rattle, Fez. I mean, from your perspective, that must have been good to see.
Yeah, it was really good to see. And I know there was, 14 changes made in the Munster team from the previous week. However, Thomond Park's a tough place to go and get a result. And you know, I think they really dug in well. They did themselves proud. They you know, were absolutely busted. I think John O'Gibbs in his post-match interview said all the guys were exhausted in the change rooms post-game. And I suppose that's all you can ask for. And they didn't let themselves down, and you know, they knew they had a slight outside chance of getting into the top three, but you know, obviously Edinburgh got the result anyway, so that didn't really matter come the end of the game. But look, it was a good effort. Just the line it didn't function, and you know, if the Ospreys are going to come to town in this playoff match in a couple of weeks time, they're going to have to get that ironed out for sure.
Are you encouraged to hear that they seem to have a new coach signed up for next season?
Yeah, it's amazing, because in years gone by, it always seemed to have been leaked out, you know, at some stage, and everybody has a good idea of who the coach is going to be. But I'm not sure if you guys have heard, and I haven't, but I have absolutely no idea who is coming in. There's been a few names banded about, but nothing seems to be concrete. So for Bryn Cunningham to come on at half time and be interviewed and say that the new coach is signed and sealed and not yet delivered, but he will be here come next season is really, really good news. And it's music to every Ulster fan's ears, because there's just been so much turmoil over the last number of months. And to have something like that with a bit of stability, I think, because it's their primary target, I think that they have seemed to get signed up. So, yeah, it's good news for Ulster for sure.
Sorry, Fez, Jimmy here. I was just going to say, if you haven't heard that, like, they certainly have kept on the wraps, but you have, if you were a betting man, where would you go?
Well, there was a couple of front runners. I heard Andy Friend was lined up for it, and then there was the whole connection with Nusafora potentially with that, and then the other one was New Zealand women's coach. I can't remember his name. You might be able to enlighten me, guys. Pat, no?
No, I know who you're talking about, though. Yeah, I saw his name the other day. Yeah. He's mentioned earlier on. Yeah,
who obviously Joe Smith would know, have relationships with. Jim Allender, Jeremy Davison, Scott Johnson from the Scottish Rugby Football Union. Alan Clark's name was being banded a bit again, but he's then taken over the Ospreys head coach job. So, they're the kind of names floating around. And to be honest, it would not surprise me if any of those names that I've just mentioned aren't going to get the job. So, look, it's an RFU decision as well, because the Ulster committee and the CEO and Bryn Cunningham, who looks after recruitment, can't just go out and make a decision without getting the rubber stamp from the RFU. So I think it's been a joint decision, and everybody's very happy. And that's the words kind of come from Bryn Cunningham.
Yeah, that New Zealand guy's Glenn Moore. The one that the lads had mentioned to me that I actually hadn't thought of, but makes all the sense in the world, is Jeremy Davidson. And maybe that's why they couldn't announce it, because the French season isn't over yet. But it'd be absolutely amazing if to get someone like him. If you're trying to get your Ulster identity back, to get someone like Jeremy Davidson would be brilliant. Now, I'm not saying it's happened, but if they were to get him, that'd be great.
Yeah, I worked under Jeremy Davidson for a couple of seasons before he went back to France again, and he's a big character. Wears his heart on his sleeve, and whether that was on the field or in the coaching setup, he was very he put boys in their place very, very quickly, and I think that's kind of needed. Les Kiss over the last couple of seasons, I was just actually thinking about Les Kiss. It almost seems like years ago that Les Kiss was actually in charge of Ulster, and it wasn't that long ago, and so much has happened within the Ulster rugby setup after he's left. But Jeremy Davison would be a hard edge, somebody who would come in and not be scared to rattle a few cages, and I think that's maybe what's needed and what's been lacking over the last couple of seasons, is that everybody's just kind of in their comfort zone, and to get the best out of some of the lads, especially some of the younger group coming through, which if you look at the team sheet for the last couple of weeks, I think the last couple of weeks is going to be the foundation for Ulster moving forward, the guys on the team sheet. So Jeremy Davison, Pat, I think to be head coach, it's a big job. Is he up to the challenge? Well, I think he'll do a good job.
So the next thing you'll be looking at is that foundation that you referred to. So there's been a lot of talk in Dublin and in Leinster and in Irish rugby about potentially an Irish fly half moving north, which would be Ross Byrne or Carberry. Any thoughts on that, Fez, or do you think that the time should go into developing young McPhillips?
Yeah, I'm just not sure. I've thought about this quite a bit over the last week, and I know there's been a lot of chat about it throughout the media. Joey Carberry, who's obviously playing second fiddle to Johnny Sexton, but yet is getting no game time. And when he does get game time for Leinster, he's playing fullback or out of position. And, for Joey Carberry to retain that spot of being Johnny Sexton's backup, I think he needs to play regular rugby. Is that going to be at Leinster? No, because Johnny Sexton's going to be there. So Eddie O'Sullivan said it's not like he would be moving to Eastern Mongolia. He's only moving 100 miles up the road, so it's not a big deal. And I think going forward, somebody like Carberry could potentially come to Ulster, but is he any better than Johnny McPhillips? Johnny McPhillips is only a young kid. So I just don't know is the answer. And again, the RFU are the ones that are going to be putting all the pressure in this to try and make sure that they have all their options covered.
I'd say Carberry is better than McPhillips, as good as McPhillips is, but I think it could work out if they were to get someone like Carberry ahead of ahead of Byrne. You know, at least Carberry, he could get that time at 10, but then he's going to be called off for Ireland, so McPhillips would then have the time to kind of get some game time as well. So in terms of like how things might work out to benefit Ulster and Ireland the most, I think Carberry would be the one to go. I know you said Byrne before.
Yeah, I'd be of the like England that if Ulster had a choice that they'd nearly look at Byrne perhaps, because Byrne's going to be there, like he's more consistent sometimes I think than Joey, and he's there like when Johnny goes they play Byrne, you know, and when the two lads go there's Byrne. So if Ulster do lose, if Carberry went there and he left, then okay, McPhillips is going to get game time, yeah, which is good, but you've got Byrne who's there and he kicks well and he's very reliable and everything he does is extremely good and solid. So I would have actually thought that I would prefer a Byrne type player.
If you look at the Leinster squad, and you know, Johnny Sexton isn't going to be around for the next 5-6 years. You know, he's going to be hanging the boots up at some stage over the next couple of seasons, you would think. So from Leinster, you know, who does Leo Cullen want as his 10 in 2 years' time to drive his Leinster team forward? So you know, you kind of got to weigh up everything, and it's not just all about Ulster here, it's also about Leinster, because they're not going to want to let two of their best players go just to fill a spot up in Ulster, and I think it's a tricky situation.
There's the now in positive news, the Geordie Murphy signing is continuing to look like a good bit of business for Ulster, because if you think about Daisel, Ulster, Geordie, and perhaps who do you want to put in that final spot in the back row? Whoever you put in from the resources up there already, never mind new recruits, that's going to look very handy and put a very good edge in that pack, Fez, because I know you've talked to us before about that Ulster pack not being as mean as it could be. That's a nice little thing to have.
Yeah, it is. But you take the two or three players that have been injured for Leinster, and you take Jimmy Heaslip out of it, you take Sean O'Brien out of it, and you just put in Geordie Murphy, and you put in your Josh Brander Flair's injured, so you put in Dan Levy, and it's just, there's always somebody there that can fill the boots. But if you take out Marcel Coetzee out of Ulster's back row, and you take Sean Dyzel out, who's actually been pretty good this last few weeks until he done his anterior cruciate ligament a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, I just think, yes, it looks brilliant if you have, you know, Coetzee, you have Geordie Murphy, and you have either Nick Timoney or Sean Reedy playing open side, then it looks brilliant. But then you just take one of those guys out with an injury, or take two guys out with an injury. I still think they need to work hard on their strength and depth, and it wouldn't surprise me if they look for another signing in the back row, second row, just to make sure and bolster the squad for next season. But yeah, I totally agree with you. It's a very tasty back row if you keep them all fit, but that's easier said than done in modern day rugby.
They could bring in your old mate James Haskell, Stephen. I think he's on the go, isn't he, this summer?
Yeah, no, he would be good for squad morale. I think he'd be a good guy to have around the change rooms. I'm not sure. I think they'd be looking to bring in somebody a bit younger.
Someone said African.
Yeah. No more staffers.
Before we let you go, we talked earlier on in the show about Dunico Callaghan and John Muldoon retiring, played their last bit of rugby this week. Anything that comes into your head when you think of those two names?
John Muldoon's just hard as nails, so durable, a nightmare to play against when you were playing against Connacht. Obviously was involved in a lot of camps with him over the years with Ireland and Ireland A, and even Big Bunners is just I just thought he was going to keep playing. I thought he was going to be the first rugby player to play rugby until he was 50 years of age. He just keeps trucking away. He keeps his body in good shape. But they're just two good guys, you know, and I think they'll go into retirement well. You know, John Muldoon, he's going to move into coaching. Donico Callaghan, I'm not 100% sure what he's doing, but he's seeing him in the media more and more. So I think I can say, you know, I wish them both very well in the retirement, but two really, really good lads, two fantastic rugby players who were tremendous servants to Connacht and to Munster and for Dunner's moving on and finishing the last couple of years of his career away in Worcester. So, you know, fair play to the two lads, and I wish them well.
That's well said. Stephen Ferris, thanks for joining us in the Hard Yards.
Thanks very much, lads.
Yeah, that was a good chat with Feds. One thing we haven't touched on yet is the miracle route for Ulster. So right now, they missed out on getting into the Pro 14 playoffs. They are into a Champions Cup playoff versus Ospreys, and they would be at home, which is important. But there is a miracle route. So what is the miracle route that people have talked about? It is the final 20th place in the Champions Cup, and this is going to take a second, so strap yourselves in. There is a way that Ulster can still get automatic qualification for the Champions Cup, and there's a way that Ulster fans should remain interested in rugby this weekend, even though they're not in the playoffs. How does it happen? Firstly, you need to work through the rules on the Champions Cup. Leinster need to win the Champions Cup, right? That's a given. As well as that, you need a team to win the Challenge Cup final that have already qualified through their league, right? So this is Cardiff versus Gloucester. Cardiff are already in. Gloucester are currently in 6th in the Premiership on 56 points, and Sale are just behind them on 54. So this weekend, Ulster fans, you want Gloucester to win at Saracens or Sale to get beaten by Leicester. Either way, you want Gloucester to qualify in 6th. Now, if that happens, right, so you're adding on to your accumulator, you want all the losing Challenge Cup semi-final teams to also have already qualified, which means Newcastle, you're grand, they're safe in 4th, but the top 14 is where it gets really interesting. So you've got Poe in 8th on 62, La Rochelle are in 7th, also on 62, Castor in 6th on 64, and Lyon in 5th on 66. You need Poe to beat Toulon, who are also fighting for the second seed and a bye into the Sammy's up there. So yeah, there's a lot going on, but if all those things were to happen, right, so if Gloucester and Poe were to finish in their top 6, then, and you need Leinster to win the Champions Cup, if all that happens, then Ulster would, I think, almost certainly get through as an automatic, if I've got this right.
Or you can just beat the Ospreys.
Or you could just beat the Ospreys. Yeah. That'd be good. So you could see both Ulster and Ospreys go through, potentially.
Ospreys would go through too, would they?
If you had Ospreys beating Ulster in the playoff, if the playoff were to take place. We don't know. That's the thing that isn't written down. Would the playoff take place if both teams were already guaranteed to go through? I don't know. There you go.
Just put the cheetahs in.
The lads have actually fallen asleep here. So let's move on to the next bit. So we've got next weekend rugby, Munster play Edinburgh. Earlier on in the season, we'd have said that was a fairly handy one for Munster. It is no longer a handy one. Hat tip to Simon Thomas from Wales Online, who pointed out that the only teams to win at least 15 games in the Pro 14 were the two Scots teams, Glasgow and Edinburgh.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah.
They both won 15 games. Yeah. No one else won that many. Edinburgh have been on a hell of a run.
Yeah. They've got that little bit of dog about them, that kind of Leicester-esque that Cockerell's brought.
Cocker-esque.
Yeah, but it seems to be something, that steeliness he's brought into that Edinburgh side. I watched them against Glasgow at the weekend, and very impressive. I think these matches are like they've always had a decent defensive side, like, I think. And Glasgow would always get the plaudits for the open rugby that they play, but very impressed with how Edinburgh actually played at the weekend. Threw the ball around, but ultimately your success is going to be built on your defence, and I was very impressed with what Cockerell's done to them. And just given that, as I said, that little bit of steel up front that adds into it. And I think people forget about Edinburgh, and I think they actually take a lot of teams by surprise. Sometimes other teams give them the respect they deserve. Same with some of the Italian sides. Not saying that they're as bad as that now, but I do think that people do kind of just treat them with a little bit of Edinburgh. Okay, we should get a win here, you know.
Well, they have been a soft touch at times, yeah. Especially, like, you know, when they've been playing in a, you know, 3,000 people at Murrayfield, that kind of thing, where it seems a bit of a joke. There's not much of an occasion, but yeah, they're good.
Right now they're good, but Munster are 10-point favourites with the bookies this weekend.
That's a big one. That's a big one. But again, you're taking into account the Thomond Park factor. You're taking into account, you'd expect some of the players to come back in. Fez mentioned it there. 14 changes. It was quite a second string team, you know, was at rest. So resting some of the boys, the Edinburgh boys, then would be well hardened, having played a Glasgow derby, Scottish derby, and looking, they got the win in that 1872 Cup. They won that, so they'll be buoyant from that. And they've contrasted with the how they selected each week. You know, one's rested, one's kept playing their front team. So, I still expect Munster to get across because they've kind of been there, they've done that. Edinburgh haven't been there for a while. They'll have that nous into Cup rugby and the home factor again.
Okay, so that game is going to be on Sky Sports, TG Car and BBC Alba. Now, very quickly, the other game is an absolute corker, Pat. Scarlets and Cheetahs.
Yeah, that should be good, shouldn't it? I think, is that the Friday? Is that on Friday night or is that...
They're both on the Saturday.
Saturday as well. Yeah. And did they clash or are they...
No, so the Munster Edinburgh is 3:15 on Saturday and Scarlets Cheetahs is 6:35.
Yeah, worth tuning in for, isn't it? Like,
yeah, if you can. So that's the only... It's on Supersport in South Africa and it's on S4C up here. So do yourself a favour. If you can tune that into your dish or whatever, do it, because that is going to be an absolute cracker of a game. Scarlets are down as 14-point favourites, but that could be like 60, 70 points in that game.
That'd be a nice open game, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. See, Tadhg Byrne again at the weekend had a line-out steal and then finished off a few phases later for a try. Yeah, he's unreal.
So I'm pretty well. One thing I will note, if Munster do get through, right, or whoever get through from that game, Leinster played the week directly after the Champions Cup final. That hasn't worked out well always in the past.
Yeah, especially if they win. Well, like, they won't be complaining if they win, but to go from that high to then go and, you know,
either way,
yeah,
it's, you're trying to top off one peak performance with trying not to slip up the next week. We will look at some of your fan questions next.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.
Welcome back to the Hard Yards. We're going to take a look at some of your social media questions now. Thanks to everyone who sent them in. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @thyrugby and use the hashtag #AskThy if you want to get a question in for next week's show. First one, from Gifts and Rugby and Stuff. If Machinot and Sergeski are out, where would you set the handicap for the final? Handicap is at 8 points. That's where it is. Hasn't really moved too much in the last couple of days, I don't think. Could be wrong. Machinot out is huge.
Yeah,
that's the big one. I don't think I'd worry too much about Sarjeski off, because he was only on the bench anyway.
He's part of a dovetailing hooking duo.
Yeah,
but Machinot has been a game winner all on his own for a club and country,
and he's a kicker as well. So yeah, it's like you're talking huge, you know.
I mean, he must be. I'm not sure of anyone on either side, and I include Jonathan Sexton in that, who could impact this game more by being out.
Yeah, I was just kind of thinking, yeah, does that mean Carter starts then? You know, like, does that mean Pat Lambie gets dropped or moved somewhere else in the back line? And they could have to rejig it, because they need the, you know, they just need to rack up the points. And Machinot was great for just giving you the, like, even as he did against Munster, killed them with kind of penalties as well to kind of stretch that lead. So they could have to make a good few changes if he's out then, yeah.
Who's the backup nine offhand?
Oh, Jesus.
No.
I'll tell you in the next 60 seconds.
There's two of them.
I know, but that's what I mean. Like, no disrespect to whoever it is, but I'm sure we've got Machinot like ingrained on the brain, and then to have someone else of, I don't know who it's going to be, to step up, you know, it seems to be a bit of a drop off.
But I'm thinking of like the Leicester game in the pool.
Yeah.
You know, just his level of performance has been so, so good.
Yeah.
He's also very unlucky. I mean, he was, well, unlucky is, he was sent off in the big Now Camp final of the top 14 in the same season he went off with concussion, didn't he, Champions Cup final.
Okay.
It's like there's another final he's going to miss, and this season I think he's been absolutely superb. Great for Leinster. You know, huge bit of luck. Xavier Chauveau and Teddy Irabaran. Yeah, I didn't even try to pronounce that, James, so don't even start.
Teddy doesn't even have his own Wikipedia page, so I don't really have that much faith in him at the moment.
For the occasion, it's a loss.
It is, yeah.
For Leinster fans, brilliant.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, right.
Similar theme, Colin Mahagan asks, did James Lowe play himself out of the Champions Cup final? Well, if you treated the game out west as a potential trial to get into a Champions Cup final squad, he didn't do well.
No, he was... he had a pretty poor game. He's still a great guy, you know, great talent to watch when teams are going forward, but there's always been question marks about his defence as well, and just kind of a haphazard performance he put in. I think he was at fault for even the first try. Like, I know some people would say Leinster should have defended stronger at the rooks, but he kind of rushed out of the line, all or nothing tackle, and missed it. Like, so he had to kind of own that one as well, gave the intercept pass away as well. And I was saying there was another time where he just got stepped, I think it was either by Tom Farrell or Tiernan O'Halloran, and you could just see him pointing to Carberry as in, I've just missed him, you tackle him next, like, you know, and jogging back as well. So considering that he's still in there, like, you know, if they can get Luke McGrath fit back again, like, Lowe is in with a shot, like, but he did himself no favours at all at the weekend.
Yeah, it was extremely casual, that's how I'd put it, like an extremely casual performance from him, just how he just kind of went about it. But it wasn't just him. I think we kind of didn't really touch on it before, but the Leinster performance, Leinster actually don't have a great record in the sports grounds, you know, and they don't like going there. They normally change the team
soft city boys from Dublin, isn't it?
They're coming down, yeah. But look, I think it's just a bit of a mindset thing that Leinster can show. This can be a kick up the ass for them, that look, we can't switch off, we're not, don't believe all the stuff you're reading about or people are speaking about you. This will bring them back down to earth now, and it'll be used to beat them now in the next couple of weeks, I'm sure.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that was it. Like, one of the things as well, just like, you saw maybe Gavin Thornbury was the standout second row down there, you know, compared against Maloney and Mick Kearney as well. And then Dennis Buckley was getting on top of Andrew Porter, and Porter's coasted through his career so far, and this was a day where they were getting in his face and he was making a few mistakes and giving penalties away. So a few lads there who might have thought that, you know, this rugby game was easy has found that it's not so as well.
Okay. Good one here from Sean Maliff. I hope I pronounced that right, Sean. With the increase in injuries and concussion, is it time to put an extra back on the bench? Ireland have been forced to play Marmion on the wing a couple of times due to the current rule. We are interpreting this as being we need an extra slot on the bench that would increase squad size.
Yeah, and 24th man, yeah, isn't it? Yeah, so 9 on the bench, isn't it? Yeah, there's 8 already, so 9 on the bench.
So be up to 24. I guarantee you, within a couple of weeks of this happening, some team's going to go with like a 7-2 split or something mad.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think even in the UBL, you have 5 subs and you can make kind of interchanges. I know people are going to compare and say rugby league, yes, but you can make a certain amount of changes, so you can bring guys on and off and on and off and rest players. And you have whatever amount of subs you can make. So maybe I wouldn't increase numbers, certainly not. But maybe if you could kind of, I don't know, people are always going to manipulate the rules as much as they can or play within the rules or close to the edge. And I think that if you shorten them, then you could make those kind of, you know, if someone's looking a bit, needs a break on and off, just give them breaks and it works.
I'd almost go the other way. I'd be interested in arguments to reduce the number of subs.
Yeah.
You know, because we see an awful lot of people coming in for 20 minutes of a game and they are just unloading everything and their professional physique and everything about them, but they're packing an hour's worth of hitting at 20 minutes. And that closes down a lot of space on a field and has a lot of impacts. But yeah, people are going to ask questions like this. On the point of concussion, I would just add there's been a law clarification from the World Rugby this month that just clarified the piece about HIAs. So let's say you have used all your subs. Well, if you have a HIA, you can bring on a replacement, someone who's already come off. And if they have to stay off, that player can stay on. Okay. So there are, you know, there are practical things that are being done around this. But yeah, I personally would be against increasing the bench.
Interesting to see how the French use that in the Six Nations next
season. Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say.
Jesus, you went there.
Oh, that did. You were thinking it, though, as well.
One from Matthew Roddy. Do you think rugby could ever use an adapted version of the combine or draft system that we see in the NFL? Maybe have a European draft?
Draft to be interesting. For me personally, combine, no. because that's promoting one-off
gym bunnies
completely, which is relevant to American football because it's so stop-start, so everything's this impact, it's all explosiveness. Rugby's not, it is to a certain degree, but it's much more stamina-based, and you can't, you do testing anyway, but I don't think it's right to, for people to be selected on a one-off.
Could we do it? Could we organise the combine differently? Like, you know, like biathlon, where they have to sort of cross-country ski for ages and then calm down and shoot, so we could have them running.
Get the heart rate down.
Yeah.
You could, yeah.
Yeah.
And mathematical equations or something like that to solve it when you're going for a run or something.
Exactly. Jim's going, what are you on?
Yeah, the draft would be interesting. It's not going to happen, but no. It'd be interesting. There's not enough
money in the game for it to make sense.
No, and this is where you need the big backers of the States and stuff like that, and all this TV money to increase and to get back like soccer about what I was back in the day.
Yeah, I did think on that subject, so we did talk about Carberry and Burns. We're not going to go over it again, but Bryn Cunningham, the comments that Fez referred to, he was talking about, look, there's two sides to anyone moving, even within the Irish system. Mm. So let alone within the Pro 14 or all of Europe, saying that's quite right for the player. Do they want to go and get game time somewhere else? Or this is my province, this is where I live, it's where I've always lived, I want to stay. You need to throw all of that out if you go draft, and it ain't working unless you're really centralised. It could work in an Irish context only, but even then,
O'Gara would hate it, wouldn't he? Ronan O'Gara.
Yeah, but I think a lot of players would, wouldn't they? I think it's a good point, and I think it's like if some players were told to go somewhere and they mightn't want to play for them, and like I think one person we can kind of look at was that kind of Ian Madigan before he left. You know, he was kind of offered around and he was like, I couldn't see myself playing there, see myself playing there. So
it's one of the strengths of the Irish system as well as potentially a weakness. It's about getting that balance. Last one from Matthew Roddy. Do you think we should introduce fly on the wall season documentaries like the NFL show All or Nothing for rugby? You could have a series that follows four teams from across the season in Super Rugby, Pro 14, Top 14, and the Premiership.
That'd be interesting.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah, because I enjoy Hard Knocks. Yeah. So that's good. And I saw the A Year Till Sunday, the Galway one. I think it'd be an interesting one, but like some tough times in those pre-season sessions, I think you'd be more intrigued about them. There'd be some guys hanging.
There'd be some fascinating times during the season. I think pre-season, definitely. Mm. And then around that contract time.
Oh, that'd be
for the next season. Like the human relationships on that would be interesting.
You'd need to see both sides of the.
You would.
If they showed it from just a player's perspective, you'll see one side of the story. But I'd be interested to see how honest. Well, no, they would be honest, I guess.
You need the management of the club, you'd need the team, and you'd need the agent. And the agent's going to be representing multiple players as well.
Yeah, and then you get to see how, well, it wouldn't go that far, but you get to see how you're positioned by your agent with four centres in your position. Who's he promoting for that? Yeah, I've promoted you, of course you have. Just didn't get back to me.
Pat, are you writing the screenplay?
Yeah, there was. I was actually just thinking of all the things. I think Sunderland are having a Netflix documentary on their season coming out soon enough, so that'd be some good fun. Yeah, but they there is, because it was an interesting one, even just to see that dynamic. I remember talking to Bernard Jackman before, and when he was at Grenoble, what he had done the season before was he had let a lot of guys know around January, February, we're not keeping you on for the next season, and then their performance levels fell off the cliff. Like, and then the next season he was saying he had to be a bit meaner about it and a bit more sly about it and let lads know, like, at the last minute, we're not keeping you on for next season. Like,
and do you know what? If I was given carte blanche to do that, I wouldn't do it about Leinster. I wouldn't do it about Saracens. I'd do it about Dragons or Zebre or the Kings. You're going to get better stories there. I do it about London Irish fighting off relegation and then getting, that's where the human interest is.
Yeah.
You know? Okay. We like the idea. Not going to happen.
Let's shop it around,
exactly. Right, that's it for this week. Make sure to use the hashtag AskTHY if you want to get a question in for next week. So thanks to Pat, James and Fez, to Al Naknan for producing, and Shane Dempsey and Fiona Delaney were on production. We'll be back next Monday with a new podcast. Subscribe to it on iTunes, Podcast Republic, SoundCloud and every good podcast app to get it straight to your phone. This has been The Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.